Thank you, Mr. Hill. Greetings, everyone. Are you ready for another interactive message? So it's a raise your hand even message. So like Mr. Hill mentioned, we're coming up on the springtime and the spring holy days and the days of unleavened bread and stuff. And so I thought it would be good to talk about a list and the lists we might have, some of the things that we maybe need to do, some of the things that are hard to do that we procrastinate. Anybody ever procrastinate? Everybody has to raise their hand on this one. Mr. Hill does not procrastinate. Let it be known. So if you do, what do you procrastinate about specifically? Don't shout it out, but maybe think about something specifically in your mind and find something. Each person, just think about one thing they want to get done and maybe haven't started. It's like looming in the thoughts, something that you have to do. And so I went on the internet because, you know, the internet does not lie, right? I heard that in a movie, actually. But I've got a list of things that people typically procrastinate about, and then I added a few. You might guess which ones I added, but going to the doctor for a checkup. This is a list to just kind of get our brains in gear for maybe something we could choose to target today in our thoughts. Calling your family and friends to see how they're doing. Maybe paying a bill. Answering your emails. I had over 8,000 emails unanswered. And I've been like trying to dwindle that number down. I have it down to about 5,000. But I can only go at it so much. I have to keep going after it. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's a thing with me. I just don't answer emails well. And I think a lot of them are spam, and it's nice to clean that up and get rid of it, right? Well, I don't always get around to it. Here's one. Overcoming addiction. That could be a thing on a to-do list that somebody might procrastinate. Maybe they think there's something they need to do about something when they haven't started. Cutting out junk food, maybe doing your homework so you can relax later. I don't know if this one is appropriate here, but asking that girl or guy out on a date. Cleaning the house. I put a real easy one here. Stop stealing. That should be a good one there to not procrastinate on stopping stealing. These easy ones are in here for a reason. You'll see why later. Exercise, getting car maintenance done, learning a foreign language, apologizing to someone after you've hurt them, telling someone you love them. I just had a crazy dream last night. And in the dream, I woke up from it thinking, man, I have to talk to my dad soon and tell him how much I love him. And then this morning when we passed each other, we were just like, hey, what's up? So now that I'm publicly saying it, I'll have to tell him. So doing the laundry, cleaning dishes, spending more time with your kids, taxes. Taxes? Oh, yeah, that's on my list. Cleaning the garage, that's a big one for me. Writing that book you always wanted to write. Decluttering, simplifying. Oh, here's another one of those big ones. Stop lying. Letting go of a mistake that you made a long time ago. I'm kind of throwing various odd things in here to show that a person's list can be big, because the first thing we want to do, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me just keep up with the list. Studying for an exam, getting to bed at a reasonable hour, not hitting snooze. That's a good thing to have on the to-do list. To defeat the snooze button is one of my favorites. Helping a friend with something they need help with. I have a friend in Grants Pass that's always there for everyone. And his wife, too. They're just really good at that. Putting out the garbage. Oh, my. Is that on there? Saving for retirement. So most of these, right, were off the internet, things that people procrastinate. So do you have one? It doesn't have to be anything on this list. Pick something in your mind that you want on your list that you want to check the box and scratch it off. Put it in your mind. I've got mine, and just for today, just for the purpose of having a list item with you guys. It's cleaning the garage. It's not been done in a while, and I have big dreams for it. Being able to, like, move around in there. Stuff like that. Big dreams. Okay. So, okay, now with some help from the Bible, let's figure out if the list item that you've come up with in your mind that you'd like to accomplish, in my case, cleaning the garage, does it deserve to be on the list? Because it's busy times. So, this was going to be about how to accomplish, you know, really how to make the list, how to accomplish hard things. It was going to be called Do Hard Things, like the book. But instead, I titled it How to Unleaven Your To-Do List. So we probably, if you're like me, you have a lot of things you want to accomplish, and we can learn to focus our efforts better if we find out what really needs to be on the list for now. So that's all this is about. Part one, unleaven your to-do list. How to do hard things. Part one, unleaven your to-do list. And so the very first point I would like to make about determining whether this item, whether these things you want to accomplish should even deserve your time or thought right now is to just sit quietly and think about them in a meditative way. So use prayerful meditation to assess the to-do list. So, and I'm saying, I know it's really simple, but I'm saying this because I will be distracted by my phone, or I'll be distracted by something I want to do more than what I maybe am procrastinating about. And I won't even sit still. I won't even want to think about the thing that's nagging me. So sit still and think about it. Think about that thing. Does it deserve to be on the list? And you don't have to panic, because you're not saying, okay, now we're going to roll up our sleeves and get this thing done. You're just agreeing to sit down and think about the thing, and am I going to do it? When am I going to do it? And use that thought process in prayer as a way to sort of inventory your list and shed some light on the subject. So the first scripture today, Ephesians 5:14. To talk about light, Ephesians 5:14, and as usual, I'll read a lot from the New Living Translation. For the light makes everything visible, Ephesians 5:14. This is why it is said, "Awake, O sleeper, rise from the dead." Oh, that reminds me of the snooze alarm again. Rise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. We just heard about this in Mr. Hill's reading of the letter from Mr. Kubik. Christ will give you light, the Logos, living by the Spirit's power, verse 15. So be careful how you live. Didn't we just hear that? Isn't that interesting? Don't live like fools, but like those who are wise. Make the most of every opportunity. Remember that phrase, every opportunity. Because a list item, a thing that we need to do, should to do, might even be hard to do, is usually an opportunity to overcome, to accomplish. So it's a way to trick your brain into looking at it in a better light. And that's what we're talking about here, light. Make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. Boy, this fits right now. Don't act thoughtlessly. Don't just give in to distraction, but understand what the Lord wants you to do. Understand what the Lord wants you to do. That's the good information. So how do you figure that out? And it really is a personal journey for everybody on the list of things that they'll have, the things that they want to accomplish and need to accomplish, and the things that they're morally convicted about. But we'll all have things that we can let go of to focus better on the things that we should do. So like I said, it's a personal journey. So what I've done here is I've brought it down into like three basic categories to de-leaven your to-do list with. Take your list item and look at it and place it into one of these three categories. And they are vital. Is it vital? Is it expendable? Is it an expendable item? An expendable doesn't mean that it's no good. It just means you're only so awesome and you can only do so much. So vital, expendable, worthwhile. Is it worthwhile? So what is a vital item first? We'll talk about that first. Matthew 7:21. Matthew 7:21, again, probably, I copied this, and I didn't write which translation, but I can tell when I start reading it. Matthew 7:21, which says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven." And this ties back in to Ephesians 5, remember, where it says, "Don't act thoughtlessly, but understand what the Lord wants you to do." Now compare understand what the Lord wants you to do with, "but he who does the will of my Father in heaven." So what we're talking about here is vital things. Not everyone who says to me, "Lord, Lord," shall enter the kingdom of heaven. So getting into God's kingdom, being about his business, that's a vital thing, is the point. Some vital issues from the Bible here. Let's look a little bit deeper into this. Revelation 21:8, the New Living Translation. Revelation chapter 21, verse 8, New Living Translation. Verse 8, "But," now this is going to be a list of vital things. "But cowards, unbelievers, the corrupt, murderers, immoral, those who practice witchcraft, idol worshippers, all liars, their fate is in the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death." That lake, that fiery lake of burning sulfur, is real hard on the to-do list. So these are vital items. And I know, preaching to the choir again, it's always a safe place to be. See also 1 Corinthians 6. Verse 9. Again, talking about things that are vital. If you know, what if the thing that you're thinking about on your list is right there in this vital category, and it could be forgiveness or something that you can actually procrastinate in doing for a while. Believe it or not, even the choir, even the preacher to the choir can procrastinate on some of this stuff. So these are vital things. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9. "Don't you realize that those who do wrong will not inherit the kingdom of God?" See, it's that vitality showing up here. "Don't fool yourselves. Those who indulge in sexual sin, who worship idols or commit adultery, male prostitutes, homosexuality, thieves." That's why earlier I had thieving on the list that the internet didn't have that one on there. "Greedy people, drunkards, abusive." So drunkards, going back to troubles with addiction that can really linger in the procrastination era. "Who are abusive, cheat people." None of these will inherit the kingdom of God. So I'm sure we don't have any of those thieving and stuff on our to-do list. Overcoming them would be on the to-do list if that were the case. So more about what the Bible might call vital, and I'll leave this up to your interpretation and your study. This one interests me, but it's not what the message is about, except that it sounds really vital if we listen to it. Proverbs 6:1. Sometime back, I took the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University course and learned about this, and it helps. Well, let's just read it here. Proverbs 6, verse 1. "My child, if you have put up security for a friend's debt, or agreed to guarantee the debt of a stranger, if you have trapped yourself by your agreement and are caught by what you said." So again, this is a person maybe overstepping their bounds of what they think they can accomplish. Maybe they've got too much on the list. Maybe they've agreed to do something that they're not quite able and quite potentially are going to fail at. So this is what, this is in a financial lean, but for you have placed yourself at your friend's mercy, swallow your pride, go and beg to have your name erased. Now this, the reason this is on the list is because of the urgency, the vital of it. Don't put it off, go do it now. That's why I put it on the list. Well, that sounds really strong language for being vital. Don't rest until you do. You know how they say, sleep on it. Not this one. This one says, don't rest. Don't sleep on it. How about anger and forgiveness? I mentioned a minute ago. Ephesians 4, verse 25 and 27. Ephesians 4, verse 25 and 27. So, stop telling lies. Let us tell our neighbors the truth. For we are all parts of the same body. Don't sin by letting anger control you. That sounds like unforgiveness to me, letting anger control you. Don't let the sun go down while you are still angry. For anger gives a foothold to the devil, and it's my point that a foothold to the devil is bad for your to-do list. Anger unconfronted equals unforgiveness. So if forgiveness, if something is troubling you, making you angry, it should be on our to-do list to figure out why and to let it go and to use the truth of God, the peace that comes from Him, to navigate our way through that. Matthew 6, verse 14, New Living Translation. Again, thank you, Mr. Walker, who told me about the New Living Translation years ago. I'm not trying to say it's the only one. Just saying, sometimes it really puts it into words that I can understand. Matthew 6, verse 14. If you forgive those who sin against you, your heavenly Father will forgive you. But if you refuse to forgive others, your Father will not forgive your sins. So that puts it in the vital category, forgiveness. Forgiveness, and along with sort of the theme of not being resentful, not carrying anger. Mr. Hill, again, in the announcements, was talking about the split, the great schism and the divide, the civil war that could loom in the country. Conservative thing, and it's gone radical, so that people hate their neighbor when they see a certain sticker or whatever, and it's gone a little crazy like that. It doesn't have to be that harboring anger. I'm not saying we're all doing that. I'm just saying certain things could trigger kind of angry thoughts now and then on the news or something. And so that's why I'm bringing it up. I've been through it. We talked about it here, I think. Remember, this is the vital category. So these to-do items can be broken into vital, worthwhile, expendable, and we're still in the vital category. So would you say that tithing or offerings are vital? Would everybody think that, according to what we believe? Pretty vital. It's something we're convicted to do. We believe in it. And I just want to make the point here that reconciliation to fellow man is even more vital than that. And so we were talking about forgiveness and whatnot. And I want to just make this point. If that's vital, forgiveness, and if tithing is vital, look here at Matthew 5, verse 23. I'm sure you can see where I'm going with this. This has jumped out at me a lot in my life as I've read it. Because sometimes we have money to give, We have an offering to give, but we still have anger somewhere that we haven't dealt with, that we haven't forgiven somebody. That's just another human being just like us. They're not even a monster. They might be the perfect storm of things that sort of divided us, and yet we still continue with our tithes and offerings. Matthew 5, verse 23, and I'm not saying we shouldn't, I'm just putting some light on this subject of vitality, of the vitalness. Vitality might mean something else. So if you're presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple, Matthew 5, 23, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave the sacrifice there. See, this is, again, sounds like that. We're in a hurry. Don't give sleep to your eyes. Run and do this. This is important. Someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. Then come and offer your sacrifice to God. So these relationship issues will often be vital. And, let's drop down here to verse 25. When you're on the way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and who will hand you over to the officer, and you will be thrown into prison. And again, prison is pretty bad on most to-do lists, and it's not on your to-do list to go there. So, did your to-do item make it into the vital category? I'm thinking about cleaning my garage. I think it's not a kingdom issue. I think my garage could stay messy a little longer, and I'm not in danger of missing out on the kingdom. But I'm not saying that it's something to be scrapped either off the list. So let's define what is expendable on the list. So now we're going to move on to expendable on our de-leavening the to-do list. Kind of a strange message. As mentioned before, anything evil on your to-do list is expendable. Okay? These items might not, these might be very good items and you'll find them expendable. Remember Moses, father-in-law? Who remembers his name?
Jethro,
I think. It reminds me of like the Beverly Hillbillies or something whenever I hear that. But remember Exodus 18. We'll go ahead and read that. And the point being that we're only so amazing. We're only so capable of doing so much. And we need to maybe de-leaven our to-do list. This message might help us to let some things go and really focus in on some ones that are vital. Of course, I think we're all good at the vital ones, but the worthwhile ones. So Exodus 18, beginning in verse 14. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he asks, "What are you really accomplishing here?" See, this is why I like the New Living Translation. That is a really interesting way, and it really brings it to life to me. What are you really accomplishing here? I can imagine him saying that. Why are you trying to do all this alone? Well, everyone stands around you from morning till evening. So not only is he not able to do it, but all the people are sort of being impositioned. You know, they're suffering too because he's trying to micromanage everything. And with good reason, as you'll see him say here in verse 15, he's going to justify it. Because the people come to me to get a ruling from God when a dispute arises. They come to me and I am the one who settles the case between the quarreling parties. I inform the people of God's decrees and give them his instructions. And then Jethro doesn't mince words at all in verse 17. This is not good, he says. Moses' father-in-law exclaimed. Oh, he even exclaimed it. I think there's an exclamation point on that. You are going to wear yourself out and the people too. Good point. This job is too heavy a burden for you to handle all by yourself. And so I'm thinking of a word that Moses needed to do. What's the word that starts with D?
Delegate.
Yes. Delegate is one of my favorite things. And you could tip too far and over-delegate and not do enough yourself. But I think Moses wasn't having that trouble. I'm reminded of my wife at home with so much to do. We have many children, so many things to do, so many chores. And once they get up to a certain age, and even before they're at the age where they can be that helpful, I mean, a toddler helping you cook. Just yesterday, I don't know if he put the eggs on the floor to watch them fall or if it was an accident, but there was 7 or 8 eggs that were in a baking project that were no longer part of that project. They were part of a different project. So the point is, she has to delegate. So what we've had to do is train up these children to have chores. And they start small, but pretty soon, I mean, I'm an employer, so I have people who work for me. I like to think of them as colleagues more than employees. But I understand the value of point. And my son, he runs all over the place. He's in good health. If I needed water, he runs and gets it. He takes out the garbage. He's just busy all the time. My wife delegates really well. Even Jeff Richards, he has men, you know, traveling about speaking to different congregations because he's one guy. And so it reminds me of him too. So how about this one on this subject of let's see, vital, where are we at? Expendable? We're on expendable. How about this one? Luke 10:38. This is a different way of looking at it. It's just another way of looking at something that isn't vital but might deserve to be on the list. Luke 10:38. Actually, some of this is pretty vital. As Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted. There's that word. I distract myself often from what I need to do. By the big dinner she was preparing, she came to Jesus and said, "Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work?" That's put really plain. "Tell her to come and help me." Now she's going to tell Jesus what to do. "Here's how you need to lead, partner. Get my sister in here so I can get this done." But the Lord said to her, "My dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. Details. There is only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her." So this is what I thought was interesting about this. This is something that she put in a vital category on the list. She kept it. So Martha had her list. Sometimes I mix them up. I think Martha's the one in the kitchen, right? Martha has her list. It's vital that we get this party exactly right. And all the decorations and the placemats and the napkins and the fork goes here. All of that needs to be just right. That's on her list. Super important. But is it? It could have been de-leavened off her list, according to Jesus, when he says that, no, here and now, time with the Messiah prior to sacrifice, amazing moment in time, and Mary was there for it. She captured it. So let's look at some of these expendable items. Just a quick assessment here. Cleaning the dishes, doing the laundry, learning a foreign language, getting the car maintenance done. All these things could be important. But the reason I'm thinking about this is sometimes spending time with the kids, maybe teaching them to read, playing with them. Kids always want to play, and before you know it, they're 6 feet tall. So cleaning the dishes, doing the laundry, all these things that need to be done, they occasionally have to go off the list so that the relationship stuff can happen right now. It's like a pivot point, moment in time. Guess what? We're doing this now. Little boy or girl comes up and wants to play. There's so many times where it's just heart-wrenching because you're... Sorry about that. It's heart-wrenching because you're leaving to work. You're going to work. And that's important. That's on the list. Without it, there's no house to play in, right? So, but there's so many times when you have to say, you know, what's that song, Cats in the Cradle? That's what it reminds me of. There's so many times when you have to go away. But some of those times you have to say, guess what? I'm sitting down right here. We're going to play Hot Wheels. And so this is how I'm trying to get us to think a bit deep about our list and to have our list maybe occasionally keep the item but set it down and come back to it. Because all of these things, car maintenance, doing the laundry, doing the dishes, all these things are technically expendable items because they're not vital items. Doesn't mean they're not worthy to be on the list. Taxes, got to do it. Render unto Caesar what's his. So again, the point of this message is just facing the list. We're going to have part two later, and we'll talk about clever ways to actually get traction on the list. But for now, we're just trying to face the list and look at it and decide what should be on it. And to promote action where it's needed, or maybe to eliminate and lighten our load, lighten the list. So, if your item was not expendable, then maybe it falls into the worthwhile category. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the worthwhile category. So why do you need to do this task? How important is it? These are things, remember back to the prayerful, meditative, sit and think, talking to God maybe. Will you be better for it? Will someone else? You know, remember, relationships. It's all about relationships. So is your item going to benefit someone else? And that is could put it right into the vital. Definitely into the worthwhile. Remember Ephesians 5:15. Be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but live like those who are wise. Make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. What's that? Is it Greek or Latin? Seize the day? Carpe diem or something like that? Your item. Is it vital or at least worthwhile? Doing your homework so you can relax later. Cleaning the house, exercise, getting car maintenance done, apologizing to someone after you've hurt them, telling someone you love them, taxes, all of it. The vital things are obviously paramount, super important. But the worthwhile items, and when I say worthwhile, I mean not kingdom, not salvation issues, but really weighty. Worthwhile items can be very weighty. A missed opportunity is called... Who's heard of opportunity cost? Anybody heard of that? Oh, good. Oh, you've heard of it? Okay, I'll talk a little bit about it here because I find it fascinating. It's a way to look at things in a different way. According to Business Insider, back in 2000... Reed Hastings approached former Blockbuster CEO John Antico and asked for $50 million to give away the company he founded called Netflix. Antico, thinking it was a very small niche business, ended the negotiations. Oh, and interesting, you guys have the only Blockbuster. You could argue with me all day about this. You'd be having less money, though. So... very small niche business, ended the negotiations and did not buy Netflix. Now Netflix, just short of being the same as CBS last year soared past the television network owner with a $32.9 billion market valuation. These are dollars. Netflix also reached the 50 million mark in subscribers of its paid service and became available in 40 countries. So that, we're talking about opportunity cost. He didn't have to say yes. He didn't say yes. It costs a lot. And when we say a lot, I hear people talk and they throw numbers around. I never really understand them, but I thought it would be good to talk about the difference just for a second in millions and billions since we're talking about opportunity cost. So here's the question. You just won $1 million, but the rules require that you need to spend it all in 1 year. How much do you have to spend per day? The answer is about $2,739.73 per day. Why do they say about when they're going to tell you down to the penny? I don't know. $2,739.73. So this means that to spend, so that's for a million. This means that to spend $1 billion in a year, you'd need to spend how much per day? It's different. It's a different number. I don't know if I can read this number. Yes, let's see. That's a 100. It looks like 2,739,000. Hezekiah, can you read this number for me? This one? Yeah, it's 2 million a day, I think.
Yeah, $2,739,726.03.
So you got to spend $2,700,000 a day. So that's just to illustrate the difference between millions and billions and to talk about how opportunity cost can be very great. And why am I talking about that? Because it's going to show up again here in a thought-provoking way. How does it relate opportunity cost to your to-do list? So think about maybe exercise. It's worthwhile. We all, I think, agree that it's worthwhile. But it costs comfort. It costs effort, sweat. It makes us so that we can't hit the snooze. We can't hit the snooze. Yeah, that's right. We don't want to hit the snooze button. We got to get up. We got to get started because we have other things to do. But if you don't spend those things, then the opportunity cost might be health problems, maybe even life snuffed out, cut short one day. And then that, of course, leads to other opportunities missed. Relationship opportunities, time with people, things that you could accomplish that you didn't accomplish. So let's do a little exercise here, and I call it put yourself in the story. I do this sometimes when I read the Bible, and I try to put my name in the place of the guy, whether it's the hero or the villain I'm reading about, and try to say, well, how would that sound if they were talking about me right there? What would I want this to say? So it's a way to visualize the success or failure also of your list items. So name a famous procrastinator. Anyone think of a Bibley one? He's a passionate guy. He loved his countrymen a lot. He used to like long walks on the beach. And he used to like great big fish. Yeah. Okay, Jonah. Jonah 1:1, he's the guy. And somebody will argue that he didn't procrastinate, he just didn't want to. But procrastinating is when you go a different direction from the thing that you feel compelled to do, and it's, or you think that you should do. So Jonah 1:1, but it's not Jonah this time, it's you. Put your name in there. So who can I pick on? Maybe Jonathan. Let's see. The Lord, verse 1, the Lord gave this message to Jonathan, son of Amittai. Get up and go to the great city of Bend. Announce my judgment against it, because I have seen how wicked its people are. But Jonathan got up and went the opposite direction. Uh-oh. Or how about this? God told August to do his taxes. But he went the opposite direction for a little while. It's hard to think about all those numbers. Okay. So, as I was studying this, I noticed something interesting that I just want to mention, even though it's not going to be terribly important to the message. But when I was reading about Jonah, listen to this, verse 4. The Lord hurled a powerful wind over the sea, causing a violent storm that threatened to break the ship apart. Fearing for their lives, the desperate sailors shouted to their gods for help and threw the cargo overboard to lighten the ship. But all this time, Jonah was sound asleep down in the hold. So the captain went down after him. How can you sleep at a time like this? He shouted. And I was reminded of he's kind of in good company, because anybody else fall asleep in a storm and they had to wake him up and say, how can you sleep like this? How can you sleep at a time like this? I thought, wow, well, that makes Jonah look kind of cool, because Jesus could slumber during a storm, and somehow Jonah could too. Okay, so now, since we picked on Mr. Hill, we can make him, we can put him in a better story here. Name a famous non-procrastinating Bible guy whose name starts with A and ends with Ham. They all know already. So easy. Turn to Genesis 12, verse 1. Put yourself in the story here so you can feel successful. Put your list item in there also. Like God's going to say, get up and go do this. So imagine he's telling you, get up and go do this, and you react so. The Lord said to Jonathan, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you and make you famous. And you will be a blessing to others. Oh, this is much better this time, Jonathan. Mr. Hill. What opportunities? Oh, yeah. So I skipped the best part, verse 4. So Jonathan departed and did as the Lord instructed. Good job. So what opportunities, because we were talking about opportunity cost, what opportunities did Jonah miss out on by going the opposite direction is a thought that I had. And I'm not sure, because he gets around to it the hard way. But he might have missed the storm at sea and being swallowed by a big fish and vomited up on the beach. I mean, I don't know. That's an opportunity cost. Is that the right way of thinking about it? I'm not sure, but he got 8. That's uncomfortable. So this brings me to another story here in Mark. Verse 1. I'll give us time to turn there. Drink some more water. Mark 1, verse 17 through 20. And Jesus said to them, follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on a little further, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were in their boat mending their nets. And immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and followed him. Imagine, that probably wasn't on Zebedee's list that day, to lose his crew and have to do all the work himself. But this got, as my dad says, put to the head of the line. They immediately went and followed him. And so you might be thinking, well, yeah, if God tells me directly to come follow him or go do something, it's a no-brainer. You're going to do it, right? You're going to do it. Of course you are, like Abraham. But remember, Jonah didn't. Sure, he had his reasons, but he's a person just like us. We might have reasons sometimes to put off that forgiveness or whatever it is that we're convinced, convicted, but not quite ready for. And I can show you some other guys who were given a direct request. Good guys, good company. We're all in good company. Good guys who were given a very direct request from Jesus himself and put it on the expendable item list. Did not. And true enough, it wasn't a vital thing. But it was a direct, earnest request. Listen to this. Luke 9. Verse, glasses, 59. To another he said, follow me. But he said, Lord, let me go and bury my father. And Jesus said to him, leave the dead to bury their own dead, but as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God. Yet another said, I will follow you, Lord, but let me first say farewell to those at home. So these guys, they wanted to, but they had some other things that they put ahead of it. So we need to rightly categorize our list items. And now look at the main one here in Matthew 26, New Living Translation, verse 26. Matthew 26, starting in verse 26. Direct request, sidelined. Sorry, verse 36. Then Jesus went with them to the olive grove called Gethsemane, and he said, sit here while I go over there to pray. He took Peter and Zebedee's two sons, James and John. He became anguished and distressed. He told them, my soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. So not only is he giving them a direct request, but with a lot of emotion even, with a lot of weight. Verse 39, he went on a little farther, bowed his face to the ground, praying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. Then he returned to the disciples, found them asleep. He said to Peter, couldn't you watch with me for even 1 hour? Keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. For the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. So there's lost opportunity here, but we don't know what it is. We don't know what it is. We know that these men are legends, are patriarchs. But there must have been some opportunity had they risen up, not hit the snooze alarm. Verse 42, then Jesus left them a second time and prayed, my Father, if this cup cannot be taken away unless I drink it, your will be done. When he returned to them again, he found them sleeping, for they couldn't keep their eyes open. So he went to pray a third time, saying the same things again. Then he came to his disciples and said, go ahead and sleep. Have your rest. But look, time has come. The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Let's be going. Look, my betrayer is here. So I'm talking about this because we will miss out on opportunities and we're in good company. But it's good to think about what we should do, what we want to do, and what we maybe can't do, and rightly make the list and accomplish it. We'll talk about accomplishing it in the next message. But so was this a salvation issue for them to stay awake with him? I would say no. But they definitely hit the snooze. And it all comes back to that procrastination. And I think it's really interesting because procrastination is basically a false sense of control. Anytime you say, I'll do it later, you're assuming you'll be there later. Like there is a later. We don't know this. And I think it's amazing that one of these guys in the story here who missed this opportunity cost is James. And if we go down to in James chapter 4, he learned something from this, I think, by what he says here. Verse 14, James 4, 14. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. So I think there was an opportunity cost there, but he got the most of it by realizing how fragile life is and how fleeting. And we shouldn't think, we shouldn't postpone the important things. Let's get our list organized and maybe winnow down a little bit and pick out what we should do, what's worthwhile, what's vital, and get after it. It's all about redeeming the time. Remember Luke 10. But the Lord said, "My dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. There is only one thing worth being concerned about. And put your name in here. Hezekiah has discovered it. It will not be taken away from him." That's interesting. What does that mean? We don't even know. He said, whatever she did, whatever Mary did that day, that will not be taken away from her. She made a good choice. And it wasn't a salvation issue, but it was worthwhile to be on the list. And she chose well. And there's some reward for it. I think it's very interesting. She made a worthwhile choice. So we all have a to-do list. I'm wrapping it up here. Spring is coming, the holy days, the days of unleavened bread, and also the Lord himself is coming. So think about this message as energy, sort of we're still preemptive. A lot of times my wife is really, she's into, anybody heard of Marie Kondo? Right, she's into decluttering and getting things, getting a smooth operating household. She's just beautiful the way she accomplishes things around the house. And I feel like we have an advantage long before we get to the days of unleavened bread and the de-leavening and this. If we get started on some of this, we're just talking about making the list now. But next time we'll talk about accomplishing things on the list. We'll face the list and we'll check off some boxes, gather the accomplishments that come from being successful. It's a good thing to make the list. Actually, did I give you guys the message where we check the boxes? Oh, that's a good one. I have to do that one here. We actually put a box next to the list item, and then as you succeed, you check it off. There's something about doing that makes you feel good and gives you energy for the next thing. Kind of like Dave Ramsey, he says, pay off the small bill. It gives you energy to attack a bigger and bigger list item. So next we'll talk about some of those actual battle methods. It'll get a little more nitty-gritty next time when we talk about doing hard things.